This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The NATO summit in Washington, D.C., the gathering of the eagles, including Turkey. What is to be done about Ukraine is the immediate agenda, but there's a larger one that's emerging. That is to do with global NATO. I understand that as observers, several states from the Indo-Pacific, Japan notably, are gathering with the eagles of the North Temperate Zone, NATO, the original NATO. And the question of Turkey has always been unanswered, to my knowledge, these last years, because Turkey's in between. It exists in a world that is best called Asia Minor, to be classical about it. Gregory, you've written of Turkey and that Mr. Erdogan feels threatened. How so, and what is to be done?
Well, essentially, we've got President Erdogan of Turkey declaring, or de facto declaring, a war against Israel and war against Greece. He's already, if you like, isolated himself from the mainstream of NATO and from the European Union by basically demanding a greater role for Turkey and Turkish autonomy, a revival, if you like, of the Ottoman Empire, which extends into Central Asia, extended down through the Middle East and the like. This is being resisted mightily. Turkey is bankrupt. It's in as bad a financial shape as China, but without the strategic depth of the People's Republic of China. So Turkey's in trouble. It's still trying to build a global empire or rebuild a global empire as Erdogan imagined the Ottoman Empire to have been. And it's basically causing problems for NATO. It's basically been excluded from much of NATO. NATO itself is not the NATO of the 1980s, which was at peak efficiency and had a purpose, which was to confront the Soviet bloc, which it did successfully. That bloc disappeared. NATO never gave up, however. It just wanted to keep going under that same momentum, so it declared Russia, post-Soviet Russia, as the new Soviet Union, which, of course, it is nothing like. And so NATO itself is looking for a mission. It's got a new Secretary General. It's not going to be a global alliance because although the NATO members still think of themselves as the center of the world, the reality is that we've seen the dynamic shift of power over to the Indo-Pacific. So we've got other treaty arrangements to deal with that, and they've not yet come into full effect, such as AUKUS, Australia, United Kingdom, United States Treaty. So we're going to see at this NATO summit, yes, we'll see President Erdogan there pushing the Ottomanist line. But we're seeing these new governments coming in. We're seeing the British under Sir Keir Starmer will be there. The new Dutch prime minister, who is representing a very conservative government, is going to be there. We're seeing NATO still unable to resolve its differences and to find a new sense of purpose. The war with Ukraine remains the sense of purpose as defined by some NATO states, including the Biden administration in the U.S. But that's going to be over within the year, possibly with the retirement of this present political cycle in the U.S. So that's going to go away, and then we're going to have to deal with a new world shape, and Russia will be coming out of this considerably stronger than it went into it. So it's going to be a very interesting NATO summit and see whether people actually focus on the long term or merely keep hand-wringing over the question of support for Ukraine, which I know the US and the UK will be doing, and possibly the French. But it's basically not looking at the broader realities.
Does Mr. Erdogan have internal threats, the Kurdish nationalists or the Islamists, or is that something that he uses to rally the forces but is not substantial?
Well, he certainly doesn't have the Islamists as his enemies because he is an Islamist and a radical Islamist at that. His government is ideologically part of the Muslim Brotherhood movement, so that is radical Islam. His big problem internally is the economy. He has absolutely impoverished Turks to the point where a huge section of the population has fallen below the poverty line. And yet he continues to commit into defense spending and to the projection of Turkish power abroad, particularly into North Africa and sub-Saharan Africa. This is costing a huge amount of money as he seeks this ancient glory, but without the funds to support it.
Yes, let's go to Africa then, because the last time we talked of Turkey at length, you mentioned that the state security apparatus overseas is much involved in several African states. Everywhere that I didn't know, they turn up, I believe, in East and West Africa. What is Erdogan's thinking about Africa? Is this the neo-Ottomanist demonstration? Is it for colonial occupation? What's his long-term plan for all of this mixing up with troubled governments?
Well, it's basically about a revival of the Ottoman Empire in parts, for example, in Somalia and the Horn of Africa generally, and in the Mashrek, the North African states, which were under Turkish influence for a long time, centuries ago. But he's also looking at broadening into Central Asia as well, and not having that much success. He's getting a lot of defense exports in Africa, so this is actually a positive thing for the Turkish economy, and that has some influence attendant with it. He's using private military contractors from Turkey to basically provide military training and exercises sales of equipment to many sub-Saharan African states. He's got a new missile range in Somalia because there wasn't enough room for testing of ballistic missiles from Turkey proper into the Black Sea area. So he's moved that down into Somalia. Basically, though, his message is one of projecting an Islamist message. So he's basically supporting a lot of the resurgent Islamist guerrilla fighting from ISIS or Daesh and Islamic State West Africa province and Boko Haram and the like. This is being supported covertly by Turkey in ways in which other foreign powers are not projecting influence into Africa. Russia, for example, has got a lot of military assistance going in and military trainers and combatants going in, particularly into Niger and places like that. And their agenda is basically strategic rather than religious. So you've got a very strange mix of competition now for foreign influence in Africa. And I think the Russians are going about it very cost-effectively. You also got those three West African states which had coups over the past couple of years, Niger, Mali, and Burkina Faso, who withdrew from the economic community of West African states. And now the ECOWAS is fighting to get them back in and saying, oh, it's forgiven. We didn't mean to say we didn't like your coup. Please come back. And meanwhile, those three states, Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger, have now created a new confederation of Sahelian states from the Sahel region, and they are going their own way. They've created their own multinational organization. Russia in particular has supported that and has provided military advice and the like to those governments.
Let me read the statement from the U.S. and the Nigerian government, Gregory, to what you're speaking. This is Dateline Niamey, Niger. The U.S. Department of Defense and the Nigerian Ministry of National Defense of the Republic of Niger want to announce that the withdrawal of U.S. forces and assets from Air Base 101 in Niamey is complete. This transition began in 19 May with signing of the terms of withdrawal and ended today, this is Dateline July 7th, during a turnover ceremony with the Joint Disengagement Commission following the final departure of a U.S. Air Force C-17 Globemaster from Air Base 101. So we're out of West Africa, and that means that the U.S. is blind to the jihadists, who I understand are very powerful throughout this region. We're blind?
Pretty much. The U.S. has still assets remaining in Nigeria, where the government actually welcomes a participation with the U.S., but it's not being done effectively. The U.S. government, in many respects, quite rightly, does not trust the Nigerian government with classified material, so they're not providing real-time targeting information to the Nigerian forces, who are facing, as you pointed out, this resurgent Islamist guerrilla threat in the northwest and northeast, are now getting more and more equipment of their own to deal with that, and are doing a reasonable job, better than it was in the say 2 years ago, but still not good enough.
The ECOWAS collapse, if that's what it is, what does this portend for the other countries that are not joining with Burkina Faso, Niger, or Mali in defense-derating democracy and gathering around caudillos, strongmen? Are other nations in the area vulnerable to that trend?
Well, I think they're not gathering around strongmen as much as they're gathering around weak men who have political power. So basically, we're seeing this fracturing of ECOWAS, which I think will increase because you've got Sierra Leone, for example, which also fell apart through a corrupt and violent election process in June last year. And they've now got 15,000 ECOWAS troops patrolling the streets of Freetown, Sierra Leone, and other cities in Sierra Leone. So I think it's not good for the fight against externally stimulated Islamist movements, but it is, I think we'll still see ECOWAS continuing. They'll, I think, come to some accommodation with this new subset, the Sahelian states, but it's not good. It's not promoting strengthened regional cooperation, because to deal with the Islamist insurgencies, which are in many respects also reflections of domestic economic deprivation, they do need cooperation. And Niger is, of course, contiguous with Nigeria and the like. So they need to cooperate, and I think they will ultimately resume cooperation, but under very different terms. But we're seeing Africa going through another period of malaise with very little real positive impact of foreign influence or foreign investment. The People's Republic of China, European Union, United States, and the like, and the United Kingdom are all in a diminished aid framework. So this is not helping the African recovery at all. South Africa is breaking apart. Fortunately, the African National Congress, which was compromised at its most recent elections on May 29th, is now going into coalition with the Democratic Alliance, which is actually a white-led party, which got a huge number of votes in the election. So it's interesting that we may see some improvement in South Africa due to this alliance, because with the Democratic Alliance in the government now with the ANC, even though the president will remain the same as Cyril Ramaphosa, I think we'll see a slightly less corruption. And this is going to be the only thing that will save South Africa from falling apart over the next year or two.
Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. Turning to the King Charles Report, I'm John Batch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Chances are you've been to the doctor recently, and you probably handed over your insurance, your ID, and even your social security number. Your doctor is just one of many places that has your personal info, and if any of them accidentally expose your details, you could be at risk for identity theft. LifeLock monitors millions of data points a second. If you become a victim, they'll fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART, or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.